All right, Tim, how you doing, buddy? It's weeks after the new year, getting ready for the new year, getting ready for AHR, Builder Show, Wet Show, you name the show, we'll all be there.
Yeah, there's quite a few shows in the next week or two, and we'll be there. But getting over the hangover of the holidays and start of the new year, it's weather's been pretty okay, so I'm hoping Chicago and AHR isn't too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the guys on the podcast, Mike Prinkavage Jr., joins us. He will be at WET and AHR doing his Getting Into Trouble act, somewhere.
Getting Into Trouble? What?
How you doing?
Me.
How's it going, Mike?
What's going on? Nice to see you. Nice to see you guys. Been a while, right? What, since Thursday?
Yeah, I saw you twice yesterday, Mike, and now I see you again this morning. So,
was his hair as well coiffed then as it is today?
Oh my gosh! Yes,
we need to start putting video on these podcasts so you can see.
Although I gotta say, our next guest that we're gonna bring on has a pretty nice coif of hair.
Yes, he does.
So we're excited to bring him on, Tim. What do you think? Should we introduce him?
Let's do it.
Thank Mike for this. Mike set this up. He's a good friend of Mike's. It's John Akoyan. He is the owner of the largest privately held plumbing contractor in California, Rotor Hero. John, how are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you. Thanks, John. Good to be on the show.
Yeah.
And thanks, Mike, for setting that up.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so I have a quick question to start off right off the bat. It's a little game. John, it's called Did I Make a Huge Mistake? Okay. I went out, as we talked about before we jumped on, I went out to visit Mike. We went to the gala out in
Orange County.
And so as part of kind of the stuff that we did as tourists, my wife and I, we went to Catalina Island, John. It was beautiful. Touristy, but it was a beautiful place. On the way back, we had dinner reservations at Javier's and Crystal Cove, but we ran late and we had to cancel. What mistake or not? Should I have gone to Javier's?
Oh, it's my favorite restaurant. So
I know. I read about it and I'm like, oh shit, I got to bring this up.
Yeah, I go there a lot with my wife, and we love hanging around Crystal Cove. So it's one of the spots we love to go to, and the food is amazing. The atmosphere is great, and they're currently closed right now. They're remodeling, so when you get back and have a chance to go, it's going to be a new and improved Javier's. So
okay, all right. Cool. We got a lot to unpack on the show because, as I mentioned earlier, you're such an interesting guy. You said your parents emigrated here when you were a young child to around the Hollywood, California area. Is that right?
Yeah, that's where my grandfather lived. And when we got to Los Angeles from Armenia, we lived with my grandfather for a couple weeks until my parents found an apartment not too far from his apartment, and we're able to move in and get our life started in the United States.
Yeah. And when you are young, you're a teenager around, 17, your dad had a heart attack, passed away, unfortunately.
Yeah, he was a breadwinner of the family. My mom didn't work. My brother was going to college at the time to become an architect, and I was in high school. And when he passed away, it was like, it was devastating. It was the most tragic thing I've experienced, losing a parent at 17. And I had to figure out what I was going to do. So I dropped out of high school and I went to work with a family friend who was a plumber. And learned plumbing, and basically, that's how I got into the trades.
John, I'm curious, what you know, going back in time, what were those valuable lessons you learned from your father that you still, you know, adopt and use today?
So one of the things I learned from my dad was hard work. I mean, my dad was, he was a truck driver, so he would leave on a Monday early morning and then get back, you know, late Saturday, and he would, you know, he'd either go up and down the coast to, you know, San Francisco and back, dropping loads to San Diego, LA, San Francisco. He'd do that three times a week. And sometimes I'd go out with him, and he was, you know, he just worked really hard, and he'd come out, he'd come back on a Sunday or a Saturday. And then on Sunday, my brother and I would have to wash the truck and change the oil on an 18, you know, 18 wheeler. It was, we'd have to go pick up the oil. It came in 5 gallon buckets. You know, it was pretty, you know, a lot of oil going in a truck, big filters, you know. So, you know, we would start working on that. We would wash the truck. We'd wash the cab. We'd change the sheets, do all of that stuff and prep it. So
wait, how old are you at this time?
I was probably, you know, 12, 13, 14 as I was doing this. I mean, it was like every Sunday was our chore, and that's the time we used to spend with our dad because he was gone most of the week.
Can I have you talk to my children at some point along in this podcast? Because anyway, no, it builds like, you know, this character in you, right? This work ethic at such a young age. I think that's really cool. I did read, tell me if this is wrong or not, but you, had just bought a house and things kind of went crazy. Your dad had passed away. You were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And the thought was, I'm not moving back into that apartment. Right. And you were like, oh, we got to find something to do to keep this house.
Yeah. Well, we bought the house, about a year, you know, before my dad passed. Mm-hmm. And until then, I was sharing a couch with my brother because we grew up in a one-bedroom apartment. And the bathroom was through our parents' bedroom, you know. So it was, a lot of times we didn't want to disturb them, you know. And it's like, and it was a very inconvenient setup. You know, here I am, you know, 15, 16 year old, and my brother's 20, and, you know, we're sharing a couch still. You know, it was those couches that open up, you know, they kind of fold out and become a bed. And, so, you know, when he passed away and he was the one that saved up the money to pay the down for the house and everything. And now I have my own room, and, those thoughts were coming to my mind because we're like, okay, how are we going to make the mortgage? Right. I mean, are we going to lose the house? And, you know, luckily we sold the truck, and then, another disaster happened because when I was working for the family friend that was a plumber, you know, my mom, you know, I told my mom, look, I could drive the truck. I've gone with my dad long enough to know how to, you know, operate this 18 wheeler. You know, I'll figure it out. And she's like, yeah, absolutely not. You're not going to. You know, your dad was always on the road, and I don't want you to have that for your family, you know, so that's not an option. And, her suggestion was get in the trades because we had a couple of, family friends that were plumbers, and she's like, they have a great life, you know, and, they're not traveling all the time like your dad. So I know you could put food on the table if you become a plumber. So if you're not going to go to school, just go into trades and, you know, and I know you'll be fine. And, it was a great plan B because plan A was to go to college and, you know, be a attorney or a doctor or whatever my parents wanted me to be. Yeah. I would have ever been able to do that.
Yeah. Was there ever a time at that age where you're struggling with like just being a kid and hanging out with maybe the wrong people or doing some things that you shouldn't be, you know what I mean? Like that all happens to all of us at that age, right?
Yeah. 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 It did. I did, you know, after my dad passed, I did hang out with the wrong crowd. I mean, I was still working, and working really hard, but I just would hang out with the wrong people in the evenings and after work. And it kind of led me into, being influenced the wrong way, you know, because of, my associations, you know, so, but I did meet my wife that I'm married to for 26 years now. At the time, and, she had a great family, and, And she was an angel. She just, you know, called me on the crowd I was hanging out with and said, listen, you're not going to get anywhere with that. And I just hung out with her more. And then we got engaged, and we were engaged for 4 years and then got married. And it kind of broke me out of that whole cycle of the wrong people I was hanging out with.
This Appetite for Construction podcast is brought to you in part by PERC, the Propane Education and Research Council. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially construction pros. It's a single clean energy source that can meet your project's performance, safety, and resilience goals while maintaining efficiency and lowering costs. See how propane can help meet your project's needs by visiting propane.com now. Propane. It's the energy for everyone.
Yeah.
John, did your brother graduate college, or did he follow you and go into the trades as well?
Yeah, he eventually became an architect, and then he really, I guess he had the wrong, you know, kind of consumer base, because he wasn't making any money doing architectural. So he came in and said, hey, John, you know, I want to be a plumber like you. So, you know, he worked with me for a few years, and now he has his own plumbing company.
It's so crazy. I listened to the story and I'm like, you know, John, you've met my father, Mike Sr., you know, and same dynamic. I mean, fortunately, he's here with us, but he is retired now. So it's nice to see him enjoying life. But when we were working together, it was always tit for tat, you know, and that true honor value system was something he really tried to emphasize with me and my younger brother, who my younger brother actually works for me now. So it's great to see that transition. And then you go from family life and getting started in the trades. You transition into business ownership. What pushed that? Was there a motivation, on behalf of your family, or was it a friend maybe?
Yeah. Or so an opportunity.
Opportunity.
Yeah. So I was a really good plumber. I mean, I would like to think I am, until I trained a friend of mine who picked it up and was doing plumbing better than I was after, you know, 3 to 6 months. And I was, you know, just dumbfounded by that. But he was, you know, then I got into profiling and figured out why, you know, he was just a lot more, you know, mechanical and hands-on than I was. I was, you know, I was forcing myself to become a good plumber, and he was just a natural at it. But I guess when it changed is I had a couple of trucks, and I was doing a lot of new construction plumbing, commercial plumbing. And I was like 19 when I started my business. I was pretty young. I started in plumbing at 17, and at 19, you know, I had my own truck and I was doing my own. And I remember when I went to get my contractor's license, back then they would take exceptions if you didn't have the 4-year experience. And I remember them interviewing me and going, hey, you know, you're 19 and you're applying for the, so I was able to convince them to let me take the test, and I passed the test, and I got my license when I was like 19 or 20, which was pretty amazing. But I was working on commercial stuff. And then one day I had a lot of money saved up because my wife was really good at saving money. She taught me how to save. And at the time we were engaged, and she taught me this, and I wanted to invest in something. So I went and bought a franchising magazine to put money into, you know, like a fast food franchise or something to make an investment. And then I saw a little plumbing franchise ad, you know, over there, and I called it. And 6 months later or 3 months later, I ended up buying a plumbing franchise, you know, and that's where I got my business, you know, experience. I didn't know how to read financials. I just knew that if my bank account was getting big, that I was making money and it kept growing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'm sure I'm making money. But then I learned about, you know, business and, you know, financing and all the other things and marketing. And that's when I, you know, got into residential and did that for like 20 years. I was their largest franchisee at the time. And I just, you know, they sold to an investment bank and things got very different, you know, started squeezing more royalties and having more products that they wanted to sell us that didn't really work, but they were making money on them. And I just, you know, knew it was time to leave, and, you know, just kind of sold my franchises, got out of that agreement, and then started Rooter Hero Plumbing in 2011. and it grew to becoming the largest residential plumbing company in 10, 11, 12 years.
John, I do have a question regarding, you know, you started off basically in a, you know, late teens, 19, buying a plumbing company, going off on your own. Do you think it would be the same in today's environment? Would it be harder or easier to do something like that? Or what would that dynamic look like?
Well, when I started my company, I made a choice. I was going to work, you know, 6 days a week, 10, 12 hours a day. That was my decision. And what I did is I went door knocking. I went to, you know, every restaurant that I knew in the area. I just drive and park at one end and I just go introduce myself. And I remember the offer. I used to tell people the first job's on me. Whatever you need done, free. I'll do the first one for free, earn your business. And then if you have any problems, call me for service. And I do that for 10, 12 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week. And, I think if anybody's working is willing to do that, I think, they probably have the same opportunity today than I did back then. In fact, I think the opportunity might even be more, with the amount of aging plumbing we have.
Well, that and just technology, social media, you know, just.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have that back then. So I was a door knocker, you know.
Yeah, just that's what I'm saying. Doors. Like you really grinded it out, you know.
And that was going to lead me into my question, John, is how do you use technology today to stay ahead of the curve?
Just recently, we started using AI a lot more, you know, with Chad, Chad GPT-4 available where, you know, we're having it help us with our ad designs. It's helping us with scripts. It's helping us with all kinds of stuff. But the world has changed. I mean, I've seen it all from when my dad had a tow truck company. You know, my first marketing job was to go to the payphones and put a sticker on the payphone that said Sam's Towing, and it was his pager number, right? Mm-hmm. So they would page him from there with a cell phone with a number of the payphone, and he'd call back. And it's like, so me and my brother used to go do that all day long, and now everything's digital. There's no more payphones and anything else. So now we do a lot of geofencing. You know, we do some of the traditional stuff we still do, which is, you know, since we have mailboxes, we still try to get into the mailboxes, but we use as much digital as possible. I'd say 80% of our budget is on digital now and technology-based marketing.
Well, living in Los Angeles, I mean, I can't drive down the 10 freeway without bumping into one of your billboards as well. So I would say that's pretty traditional. You know?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Let's get the elephant out of the room. You guys are competitors. Are you telling me, Mike? You guys,
but I mean, John's on a whole different level. I mean, I've always said this too, like on our IG lives, you know, competitors, there's plenty of fish in the sea. I can't emphasize that enough.
And competition makes it better for sure.
It does. And networking makes it even better, you know? I think you'd agree, right, John? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's, you know, there's just so much work out there that, you know, I don't even look at competitors as being like a problem for any business. I mean, most of the problems in a business is internal. You know, it's like, I love telling my team, you know, that this analogy that I use is like, no ship has ever sunk because of all of the water in the ocean. It's the water that gets into the ship. So, you know, we just have to make sure that we don't have holes in our boat. You know, that's all we got to worry about. You know, it doesn't matter who's out there, who's in the ocean. It's just endless, right? Let's just make sure that we do the best we can to be a good, efficient company, and everything else takes care of itself.
And I think one thing that I respect and I love about your organization, you specifically, is that you've developed what most companies would consider standard operating processes, but yours goes to the core of integrity and value. You created Values First, you know, which is almost like a Bible that you stand by, correct? And maybe you Absolutely. Could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we have our values, you know, faith, integrity, respect, service, and teamwork. And we wrote a book about it, which shows examples of, you know, us portraying those values in the workplace. And it's a book that we give to every employee that gets hired at Rooter Hero. And we also have it on Audible, and it's also available for anybody. But it's something that we go by, and we use the values to solve most of our problems. We're not perfect, but it gives us a guideline of, you know, what we need to do. If we do have a problem, the values, it's always values related. You know, we can always go to that, and it helps us clarify what the solution is going to be.
So, John, you're an accomplished author. One of the books you had written is Temporarily Broken, the John Acoyan Story. Was this the first book you had written?
No, that's actually the last book I
wrote. The last one? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the first book I wrote is Career in Plumbing, you know, how lucrative it is, how it's a story about how I got into plumbing, where, you know, it was a plan B for me, but it actually became a really good plan B because of my mom and her suggesting me getting into the trades. And then the second one I wrote is called 99 Millionaires. It's the book we wrote about plumbing salespeople and how they can create a lot of wealth in the plumbing industry, or in just the trades industry. You know, it starts with a nice fable in the front. I mean, we take our employees, our top 20% of our staff, to Mexico for a vacation every year. And it starts with a story about us being on one of those trips. You know, so it's a really good book that talks about how to create wealth in the trades. And then the third one is Values First. And then I wrote a book called How I Grew My Plumbing Company from 0 to 50 million in 9 years, and how I plan to triple it in the next 5. You know, that's a
Let's talk about that. Let's talk.
Yeah. So that a lot of the, you know, what I've done to grow the company and all the, you know, strategies we used and all the departments we had to open up is there. It just basically, I feel like, you know, sharing with the whole trade community is something that's important. You know, if you could help other people achieve their goals, you're going to achieve yours. And then the last one I wrote was Temporarily Broken. Primarily, I wrote that book for my kids, and then my ghostwriter who helped me kind of put the book together said, hey, this is really good. I think you should put it out in the public. And then I gave it to a few friends, and they're like, wow, this is a great story. You know, I think you should publish it. And then I just kind of put it on Amazon after that.
I've listened to it.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to comment and say that I've listened to it. And you actually narrate the Audible book as well, which is great because you really put like a flair, you know, in certain aspects of, you know, early history and that sort of thing. You emphasize it. So sorry, Tim, go ahead.
John, you've talked multiple times in the last few minutes about your team. One of the challenges we find with the business owners that are our audience is strategies for attracting and retaining top talent. What's your secret sauce to getting a great team put together?
Being accessible is one, because I've always been very accessible to my team, and celebrating the wins together. You know, it's something we've done for many, many years. We're always recognizing our team for everything they're doing, from getting reviews to, you know, winning awards at our annual holiday party, to taking them on vacations. And I think mostly is showing up, you know, because I have a meeting with my team every week. Every month I get into a meeting. We call it an all-team meeting, and we're a very transparent organization. So we share all of our, you know, goals and our numbers and our EBITDA numbers and everything with our entire team. Because I'd like people to know where they're at. So I think people love to be part of something, you know, something great, something big, something exciting. And if you can continue to share the vision with the team, and then always recognize them when they're doing something right, you know, they tend to want to work harder and do a lot more for the company. And it's just been something that we've done from inception, and something I love to do. And you know, sometimes I'm a little too transparent is what people tell me. I mean, but I don't like surprises and I don't like surprising people. And I definitely like to talk about where the company's at, good or bad. I mean, there's been times I've gone into a all-team meeting going, guys, you know, like, it's not good. You know, these are the things we got to do to get the company to the next level. And this is the reason why you should do it, you know, because it's going to open up more doors. And so I think those are the things that we do here at Rooter Hero, and me being accessible. I mean, going to our offices and being in front of our team and, you know, and just being there makes a big difference for them.
Yeah, I'd have to strongly agree with that. Even with a small organization like myself, the Family Plumber, you know, being accessible, you know, with a small group is where you start, and then you scale to the level that you're at, John. And to lose that is really going to hurt a company if you're not somewhat accessible. And to your point, transparency, I have to agree with you. A lot of owners say, you know what, you can't be transparent. And I beg to differ. So I'm in the same team, John, you know, when it comes to the way that that you manage and lead a company. I totally agree with those. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes the transparency backfires, like, but it doesn't backfire too much. I mean, look, I recently had like a manager, you know, that quit to go start his own company with one of our salespeople. And he's like, wow, you know, we're just making a whole lot of money and I want to, you know, start my own business. I'm like, great, go for it. You know, because, you know, when you're sharing your numbers and the financials and everything, sometimes it motivates people to want to go do their own thing. You know, I try to create a win for all kind of, you know, atmosphere here, but, you know, sometimes people take that information and they want to go become your competitor, which is okay. I mean, it happens, right? And you know, that's when some people are like, hey, you're being too transparent. You're showing people exactly how to go start their own business. I go, you know, what if I didn't educate them and they stayed and didn't know how to run our business? You know, how bad would that be?
Right. Yeah.
True.
Exactly. Mike, you know, we've talked a lot. We do the Instagram lives and stuff like that. You had mentioned that your business experienced a little bit of a lull. How are both of you guys, how are you seeing early 2024 and the rest of the year?
Oh, I'll let John answer this one first. I just talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but John, yeah, I'm curious. What does 2024 look like first quarter?
Well, it's a lot different from the beginning of 2023. I'll tell you that much. Yeah. So it's getting a little harder and, you got to just roll up your sleeves and do more work. And that's fine. I think it's going to be a great year. I think 2024 is going to be amazing and it's already off to a good start. And, you know, our goal is to, you know, open up multiple centers. You know, I think whenever the economy is down, there's an advantage to getting into markets and doing certain things. So we're definitely looking at growing. We're looking at double downing on all of our efforts and just seeing what the results will be. Just put in the hard work. And eventually, you know, everything will come together.
Well, let me ask you this. And this is not a plug for Service Titan, but we want to share, you know, success stories or whatever you're using. But, Mike had mentioned that you're an early adopter of Service Titan's products and services, and talk about how that has helped grow the business.
Yeah. I remember when we were looking at changing softwares back then, that's when I met Vahe and Ara and, we're going to go with this one other software. We're on this software called Dispatch Pro, which was not the Dispatch Pro that Service Titan has, not the feature they have, which is Dispatch Pro, but the software was called Dispatch Pro. It was written on an old Fox database system, and it was kind of slow and clunky, and it was like, you know, certain things that it didn't do. And I was looking at going on another software, and they were telling me all the things that they wouldn't be willing to do. I was wanting to customize it for our own business needs. And one of the things we wanted was a cradle-to-grave marketing report. So when we went to Vahe and Ara when they were just starting, and I'm like, look, you know, we have a unique phone number. When that phone number rings, you know, we want that to trace and go back to telling us how much our revenue was, you know, from that phone number. He's like, yeah, that's simple. I mean, I'm like, well, nobody else could do it. Can you guys do it? He's like, yeah, we could do it. So that was one of the key features that they were able to develop. as they were starting the software, and they just kept building on that and building on that, and eventually became, you know, so robust that, you know, most of the you know, plumbing and trades got onto that software. So
yeah. Was the meeting at a ski chalet by chance?
No, they met when they met together. Know. It was at a ski chalet, but it was actually at Big Bear. I think they were checking into a hotel when they met.
Oh, I love the story.
That was a great. It's one of the chapters in my story that I talk about them. And they said that they were, you know, right about to close the business down before we, you know, helped get one of the biggest accounts they have now. And we were very instrumental on helping that happen. And it kind of propelled the business to being what it is now.
That's actually pretty cool because, you know, they help you grow, but in actuality, the size of your company helped them grow at the same time, right? That's cool.
Yeah.
So I'm here, you know, we're talking about plumbing, but what I'm really hearing is a lot of data-driven information here. And John, I would ask you, how much does data drive the business processes?
I mean, we make decisions on data all the time. Everything is based on data. And it's and having the availability or having the reporting to give you that crucial information is extremely valuable. And we didn't have that info. That's why, you know, marketing being our second largest expense item next to payroll, you know, we wanted to get more data on marketing and no other software provided that data. And when they developed it and they were able to, you know, give us that data, it really helped us in the early days make so many good marketing decisions that helped propel the company to grow. So I think data is really important.
Yeah. And I'd agree with that. Well, you know, that story about being an early adopter with ServiceTitan, you know, sits so close to me as well, because, I was the young son. You know, my dad was on paper invoices, you know, till I took over the company, and to get him to switch over to ServiceTitan was like, you know, pulling teeth, you know, and I think once we did, that was a game changer. Like an absolute game changer for us. So, so a testament to ServiceTitan on that for sure. Data. How often do you think, you know, you're reviewing with your team, but is it on a monthly basis, a weekly basis, daily? I mean, how often should a business owner really be, you know, checking their numbers and looking at all this information?
I mean, I get auto reports from them all the time. So I'm looking at it on a daily basis on certain reports. There are certain reports we look at it weekly and monthly. But I think the, you know, depending on what are those key drivers are, you should be looking at reports all the time. It's another feature. I mean, they created, I used to have, you know, my closing dispatcher do all the reports and send it to me every evening. And then they created the auto reporting feature, which automatically generates the report and sends it to you. And it's more accurate than, you know, somebody making a mistake in Excel, you know?
True.
So we opened with telling our audience that you're the largest privately held plumbing contractor, but in terms of like trucks and employees, I mean, what are we talking about?
We're about 500 employees. Mm-hmm. We have about 300 plus trucks on the road.
And you're in other states too.
We're in Arizona. We're mm-hmm. getting ready to open in Nevada as well. We have a couple locations. This year we want to open up in Nevada. So we're in Phoenix and then most of California. We don't cover the central California, which is sort of like Bakersfield, Fresno. But we're pretty big in Northern California and Southern.
I'm sure you can't wait for that that express train to go from LA.
Yeah.
Right? That'll be your daily commuter.
I did read that you were doing some developing or got into the develop aspect of construction. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. When I, in my early days in plumbing, I was a new construction plumber. So I've been around projects and, you know, been around development quite a bit. And that was an area that, you know, I invested in. So we're building just a few projects here and there. Mm-hmm. It's something that I do on my weekends. On Saturdays, I usually you know, go out to the development sites and look at the progress. We have a couple of foremen that are helping with the project, and it has its own staff that's doing all the work over there.
John, you talked a lot about the value system that you have in your, with your culture and your, with your company. What inspires you or makes you tick?
What inspires me primarily is a quote I heard a long time ago from Zig Ziglar. He was one of the guys I used to go and try to visit every time he was speaking at an event, and read his books and everything. And one of the things he said that resonated with me a long time ago is that if you help enough people achieve their goals, you will achieve yours. So that made me want to become a giver, and have a giver's mentality. And I guess, you know, that's basically what primarily is driving me with my family, with my business, with the people I work with, is finding out what their goals are. One of the things that I love to ask, and I ask in any interview question when I'm, you know, dealing with somebody that's going to come in and help me build this company, is that if we were sitting here 3 years into the future, what has to have happened over those 3 years for you to feel good about your results, both personally and professionally? And do you mind if I take notes? And I would start writing down everything they would tell me. And then if they were somebody that would come along, I'd put that in my calendar and check up on them every so often and go, hey, just want to know, you know, are we helping you get this goal done? If it's a professional goal or a personal goal, and then just following up with them until, you know, and showing that, look, I do care. I want to help make that happen. And if we could create a vehicle to make that happen, then I think we'll have a lot of engaged people here.
Kind of piggybacking off of that. Like I mentioned, your career and your life is an interesting story to me, you know, starting off as, you know, a teenager and getting into the plumbing industry and buying your own company and, you know, now owning this company. If you could, what are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of a few things. I've got a couple of things that are really important to me. And one of them is my family. I'm really proud of my two boys, Andrew and Christian, and what they're turning out to be. And, you know, they definitely, my wife, she's, ever since we've gotten married, she's actually come into the business and help me with everything that I do. Until today, she's still in the business. And so I'm really proud to have such an incredible family. And I'm proud of the brand we built and the people that helped build it, you know, because this did not happen with just me. You know, a lot of people put me on their shoulders and lifted me up and helped us get to a different level. And if it wasn't for all of those good people that are here at Hero Land that are continuously doing what they're doing, this would not be possible. So I feel like I owe it to this team and the people in this company to do whatever I can to help them with their families. So I work really hard to, you know, figure out ways to help everybody, especially the ones that have been here and continue to work really hard to help this company become what it is.
That's coming awesome. from a local yeah. competitor, I mean, I second that, John. You're doing an amazing job at it. You inspired me, you know, especially over the past couple of years, you know, since we've talked more and more, you know, and you're doing an amazing thing for the community, plumbing community, but also HVAC too, all around. So glad to hear you say that, and it's working, man.
Thanks. Yeah,
and when I hear Hero Land, I envision a theme park. So maybe as a developer, is that something in the future you're going to have, like a Roto Hero theme park, or, you know, compete with Disney out there?
Well, we do have we do have a couple acres here in Porter Ranch that we're our headquarters in, and we've got plans to make it a very memorable experience for all of our staff that goes through it. So. Wow. Yeah, we're working hard. We're just trying to get permits. And, you know, being in Los Angeles, and being in California, especially getting permits is a task of its own. So we're almost at the finish line of getting the permits, not starting breaking ground yet.
Well, I loved hearing about the transparency. I loved hearing about the giving, the values, the family focus. It's evident when John and Mike and I talked earlier before we brought you on, John, that this was going to be a great segment, and it's no doubt it has been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it's been, like Tim says, pleasure getting to know you, seeing you face to face, and God, continued success. And thanks so much for jumping on. We really appreciate the time.
Yeah. Thank you,
John. Thank you. I appreciate being on it. And thank you, Mike, for inviting me to be here with John and Tim on this podcast.
And so, Tim, can you firmly say who has the best coif of hair before we jump off?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with John here.
Although, oh!
JP, you've got a good coif of hair under that hat as well. I'm the only one that's follically challenged on this podcast today.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much. Mike, thanks for setting this up. Appreciate all you do, too. So have a great weekend, guys.